Water, life's most vital liquid, was in many ways the great villain of the past week. Last Sunday's enormous tsunamis swept away their instant victims, and water now poses a grave health threat to survivors of the giant waves. Clean water facilities, from individual wells to extensive municipal systems, were destroyed. Providing clean water to survivors is perhaps the most urgent challenge facing emergency and relief workers. And establishing permanent clean water systems poses a substantial long-term challenge. Les Roberts is a water engineer and research associate at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University. Speaking from his home in Cincinnatus, New York, Dr. Roberts explained how the most immediate challenges might be met.
In places where people have access to fresh water that hasn't been destroyed with the infusion of salt, probably just chlorinating that water where it is the most efficient way. There'll be other places where water will need to be trucked in because no fresh water will be available.
What is the big challenge of trucking in water that's needed?
Trucking is very expensive, and it's somewhat unreliable. If bridges go out, if trucks break down, then suddenly your water supply is broken. And it just takes a lot of time and effort to move large volumes of water compared to piping water, or the ideal, pulling it out of a river or a stream or a pond right next to where people live and treating it there.
So we talked about chlorination, we talked about trucking. What other options?
Several militaries have these devices called reverse osmosis units. And they're essentially a big kidney dialysis unit that squeezes water through a plastic membrane. And the membrane has such tiny holes that it allows through water molecules, but it doesn't allow through salt molecules. Therefore, in settings where people only have salty water, these will be quite a life-saving device. But they take a lot of energy and effort to put them in, and it takes a lot of energy to run them continuously and pump that water through the filters, and that's a short-term solution. There will be places where the wells can probably be quickly refurbished, and the salt water hasn't infused down into the groundwater, and with very little effort, the old wells will be able to be repaired and get up and running quickly.
And what about big technology that's needed by way of purification plants or desalinization plants?
Yeah, unfortunately, in large cities, there will need to be major engineering efforts made to get large water systems up and running again, and that's not going to happen in the coming days, and it might take several weeks.
But weeks, not months?
It depends on the situation. If all the buildings and all the pipes have been destroyed, it could be months. The group Oxfam set up a water supply for a camp in Goma, Zaire in 1994. Two guys with a truck set up a piped water system for the whole camp in just about 3 weeks. Oxfam would add some coagulant, as it's called, to make the dirt settle out of the water, and then they added chlorine before they distributed it out through this camp of 250,000 people.
So these don't have to be very sophisticated, these systems?
They don't. There are three problems. There is the problem of structures destroyed. That's going to take some engineering fixing to get them over. There's salt in the water. There's not much that can be done other than this reverse osmosis process that I mentioned for that. And finally, there's bacteria in the water. And it doesn't take a lot of high technology to remove bacteria from water. Chlorine with a little bit of either filtering or coagulation first does it very, very well.
Are there public education projects that need to get going?
Absolutely. The tragedy of displaced people is that not only has their system for collecting water gone awry, but everything else that protected their health before is missing. They're now defecating in places where they might not have before, so maybe their feces is able to slosh around and get into the water supply more easily if latrines have been destroyed. So there needs to be a pretty comprehensive strategy to get people to do essentially three things: to defecate in a safe place, to try to only drink waters that they believe to be safe, and safe needs to be defined by the local people. Sometimes it might be boiling, sometimes it might be chlorinated, sometimes it might just be from a safe source. And finally, people need to properly cook and eat hot food rather than in times of little energy and little ability to cook. Cooking rice, for example, one day and eating it for four. That's a major way by which diarrheal diseases can be transmitted as well.
Les Roberts is a water engineer and research associate with the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Thanks.
My pleasure.